quick, right? We let us go.
That's right. So what I'll do is I'll start the introductions, pass it down the way, and then let's keep it going, because we'd love to know what your biggies are around local investing or what your questions are around local investing, so that we'll target some of our thinking a little bit more. My name is Rebecca Ryan. I'm an entrepreneur. I own a company called Next Generation Consulting. And I started the Local Investment Opportunities Network as a volunteer project for the community. I read an article in a magazine about a group of local investors in the state of Washington who decided Wall Street wasn't going to help them, and the feds weren't going to help them, and they needed to help themselves. This is in the middle of a recession. So they pooled their money, and they started to make that money available to local businesses who needed loans to either get through the recession or develop, you know, expand their goat dairy business or whatever the case was. So I got on the horn with the guy who was the facilitator of that network, and I said, what does it take to do this? And he told me, and about 6 months later, we launched LION, the Local Investment Opportunities Network, here in Madison. We now have about 24 investors, if you include spouses. There are a few people who do this as spouses or partners. We have, on paper, over $3.5 million that's available to invest. That's what we usually ask. And I brought examples of the investor application and the request for businesses that they fill out. We always ask members, you know, how much are you thinking of investing, or how much are you, you know, thinking you want to put into the local investment stream, so we have a sense of that. And I don't know exact deal numbers, like I can't tell you how many direct investments have been made, because that is, that can be private. I am not a broker. I am not. All I do is I encourage people to join the investment group, and I encourage companies that need money to apply, and then I, you know, I put them together. I make those them known to each other. So I don't have direct data, but I do know that we haven't had any failures. I know that we've had 13 businesses come through. Two businesses have come through twice requesting money. We haven't had any defaults that I'm aware of. I think that means we've had no defaults, because I'm pretty sure I would know. They would tell me. And we just see it as a very simple, elegant model to get money off Wall Street and put it on Main Street. A lot of people are just dissatisfied. They don't know who manages their money. They don't know which companies they're invested in if they send money away to their 401k. So this gives them line of sight to their investment. They know who they're investing in and what the products are. Yeah. So that's a little bit about LION. It's now my pleasure to introduce Tara Johnson and Mona Johnson. They're not sisters.
Separated in
prison.
Exactly. Clearly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tara represents kind of the business aspect of this, and Mona represents sort of the investor aspect of this. And Tara also has been working a lot on the system. You know, like, this needs to be a whole sort of investment ecosystem. So why don't you guys go, and then we'll just keep going around.
So I am Tara Johnson. If you go to the Willie Street Co-op or your local co-op anywhere in the country, or you go to a and you go in the supplement section, you'll see this can of whey protein, and it says Tara's Whey on it. And
ta-da!
Yes,
Tara.
I'm Tara, yes.
No way.
Whey.
No way.
The thing about whey is it provokes all these puns, like constant puns. And actually, Tara's Whey was a pun. It's kind of like two puns.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, many puns.
Many puns. So, yeah, it was intentional, actually. I started that company and had to build a plant. We were the only way you could have organic whey was to have a separate, a completely unique plant, because it had to be able to keep the organic separate. And it was a very expensive endeavor to do that. So I raised $14 million initially to start the business, and then subsequently raised money and went on to sell the company. So it went through a whole transition. And that was the only way we were going to get that plant here. I just read yesterday, actually, that they're going to double the size of the plant.
Wow.
Yeah, $20 million coming back into the state, and that'll be another probably 20 jobs or something when that expansion happens. So hundreds of organic farms have benefited from starting that company. They get paid a great top of the whey in a way that I've seen before. We're also the only goat whey protein company for nutritional supplements for humans, which means the same thing is true for the goat people, that the goat cheese people used to have to dump whey, right?
Right.
It was they'd have to pay to get rid of it, so now they're getting paid for it. So, so lots of people in the state have benefited from that. So I learned a ton about how to start a business, how to finance it over its life cycle, and in sustainable food and agriculture, things that I care about. So I have since been focusing on, like, you know, people say, well, what are you going to do next? And I said, well, what I want to do next is help a whole another generation of people do what I did, or their version of what I did, because I believe that that, for me, is my greatest gift to the world in terms of getting better food and better food and better farming and better local economies. So I do technical assistance. People call it technical assistance. So what that means is I help entrepreneurs raise money for their businesses. I help them keep, you know, when the buggy starts like going a bit off of the road, I help them get the buggy back on the road, you know, whatever is pulling it off the road. And then people say, well, doesn't that just, you know, happen and then they go away? Like the Lion folks that I work with, don't they just get money and then they're fine? And I'm like, no, actually not, because companies that are doing well constantly, as they grow, they keep needing money, right? So it's kind of a continuous thing. So you get over one phase and then you have another phase. And the more we can create opportunities for that money to come locally, the better. All my investors were from the state of Wisconsin, actually. They weren't all from Madison, but they were all from Wisconsin. And so it is, and I had a local bank. So that's another thing about keeping things local. A big bank from Washington, you know, that was based in Chicago or New York would never have done the banking piece of what I did. So it's really important, like, to work with the local financing people, money like this. So that's what I do. And I think other people will probably agree with this on the panel, that one of the things we've discovered is the technical assistance is absolutely critical to the success of the model, right? They're kind of, they go together, because we want these businesses to succeed. That's why we're giving them money. And it's hard to, business is tough, it always is. And so the more we can help them, give them the support to be successful, the better. So Slogan Wisconsin and Lion and the Willie Street Fund are all new sources of locally generated capital. They all need this technical assistance and have, to varying degrees, normalized that. And that's my story.
Great. Good work.
So I'm Molly Johnson. My partner John and I sometimes make loans to people and businesses we know. Most of them are local. Our savings are really modest, and the loans are pretty small, usually. We started when John made a loan to somebody who couldn't get a loan from the bank and needed some money to move forward with a project. And so the borrower was happy. He paid back the whole loan on time, so John was happy. John got the interest. And so we started expanding. So we did some vehicle loans, some small business loans, and some small mortgages. That's kind of how we started out. And then maybe because we hang out with Rebecca and Tara, more and more the loans are to local food providers. So we financed everything from tractors to kitchen equipment. And maybe we'll save the details for later.
Sure.
Yeah, that's perfect. That's where we are.
Oh, you're going to love this. I'm Steve. I'm from Waukesha, and I retired not too long ago, and all my investments are in horribly, horrible fascist Wall Street.
It's the American way.
It is. It is. And I started early, and I sold metals for 20-some years and did pretty well at it, and so I've invested in, you know, what do they call those things, the company, the investment plans, you know, mm-hmm. So I've got all these damn stocks, and they're all horrible. So when I learned about Al, now when I didn't know anything about politics before I, except I knew I was, I always voted Democratic. I've been voting for a Democrat now, you made me. So I'm full Green Party and radicalized now.
Yeah.
But the thing is, then my mother died, and she left me 1,000 shares of ExxonMobil. And I knew I couldn't take that. So I sold it all. But in selling it all, I had an enormous
capital
gain. Yeah. So I don't know. This is awful. I'd like to know more about it. You know, I can see doing divestment. Oh, I divested that 1,000 shares right away. I just I couldn't do that. Because I'm in 350.org and I just can't take that. But I'd like to learn more about local investment. That's why I'm here.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. Okay. I'm from Minnesota. I retired a little bit longer than you, about 9 years ago. And I wouldn't own a stock for anything. Fortunately, you know, we're in a position where we can put all our money in CDs, you know, with local banks, small banks, and the credit unions. You don't make much, but we have enough where it'll see us through until you finally get some politicians who will quit manipulating, you know, the interest rates, and it's going to get a decent return. But there has to be some. Stocks are not an option with me. And CDs are pitiful, so there has to be something else. And so maybe I can get something.
Yep, right on. Cool. We were going to go around and see what people's interest was in local investing, or if you have experience in local investing.
Well, we're here at Bundy Falls. we were trying to go to the
Democracy. So we're sloppy seconds.
What if Democracy to the United States? There's nobody here. I guess they're not interested in starting democracy.
I think there's some kind of event at the Capitol or something.
What's that?
I think there's some kind of event at the Capitol, a couple of demonstrations.
Let's focus on this.
Right.
Yeah, we'll have to vote. I don't know.
You're here by default, it sounds.
Well, yeah, I have stock. I'm not much of an investor. I believe moving money from Wall Street to Main Street, yeah. Money talks, right? I'm from Gaithersburg, Maryland. My name's Al Poland. And I'm happy to be here at this shindig. It's really pretty good.
I'm Helen Poland. I also present Gaithersburg with him, my husband. And my income now is either my retirement pay, my
habits,
and my investments, my grandmother. A foundation from my father. And I'm retired, so everything is invested. Invested pretty widely in also different countries. Mm-hmm. And I'm still learning about investing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's good to learn something.
Yeah. I'm Michael from Global Madison here. Until recently, I worked at the University at the Center for Cooperatives. So I'm a co-op advocate and interested in how co-ops can fit into local investing.
Cool. Thanks, Michael.
I'm also Michael. I'm a journalist and edit Occupy.com currently. And we definitely are always, I'm interested personally and for writing about and covering new initiatives that are helping advance invest, obviously, in the economic sphere. Nothing to do with where people can put their money in better places.
I'm Dave from New Jersey. I would invest in municipal tax liens, and I would purchase discounted mortgage loans, and then forgive them. There's no money in
it.
Sort of negative investment.
Well, that's our family policy. Buy high, sell low.
A sign on the wall that says, "We're not, we weren't intentionally a nonprofit corporation, it just turned out there." So I'm Ron, and I live in Madison now. I used to live in Baltimore. And I've been interested in the idea of investing locally and in your community for a long, long time. And when I was in Baltimore, we actually had an organization that surveyed the banks who do all this redlining, you know, won't make mortgages in certain neighborhoods and so on and so forth. And there was like no bank that was good, you know, even like small local banks in Baltimore weren't good. Even minority-owned banks weren't good. It was like horrible. When I moved to Madison 6 years ago, I was like excited to find that we actually had something called a community bank here, Wisconsin Community Bank. So I started banking with them, and then I found out, even more to my surprise, that they were owned by a company out of Iowa, a financial company, that had one of the pioneers in socially responsible investing, who had been, you know, doing this since like the early 1980s, which is essentially when socially responsible investing started. And so I was very, very excited about that. But there's a caveat that goes with socially responsible investing, which is that most places that do it, they have like a set of criteria for how they decide who they will and won't invest in. And nobody's criteria ever matches your criteria. So you have to, like, you know, find the ones that are close to what you want, or do it yourself. But I'm really, really interested in learning more about this kind of local investing and stuff. And she's also overflow from next door.
I'm Jim Brewer. I'm from Honolulu. I've lived there 37 years, almost half of my life. I have a TV program for, this is my 20th year. It's called Employees Today, and I've been at it for a long time. But I was a nuclear submarine, so I got out and became an anti-nuclear person and a peace activist. And I helped organize stopping the nuclear waste ships from stopping in Hawaii. So they have to go around another way now.
All right.
There's a whole bunch of other things, but it's been 36 years of activism.
Thank you.
Yes,
I saw him sneak in.
Just saying who you are. Go ahead.
My name's Richard Worthen. I'm from Alton, Illinois, which is 15 miles upstream from St. Louis. And I'm local Sierra Club activist, politician, agitator. I happen to think that I was involved in local government, county board, and I would think that there's one place that is the real key point where corporations can't stop us, and that's the food, local food. We have to have food. We'll kill to get food, or we'll organize to get food, or we'll do whatever we got have to do to get food. And that, regardless of the fact that Monsanto is in St. Louis, and they're trying to destroy all our food so that they can all own it and control it, I don't think they'll be successful at that either, because heritage seed movement can't be stopped. And so I think organizing for the local food production and getting the act together with our own local bank or our local credit unions or our rich sugar daddy or mommy, and for organizing ourselves for the local food production. production and financing and the marketing that goes with that. Those people already exist. They're already out there everywhere, and they just need to be encouraged. And so those of us in the agitation business got to agitate and organize. I'm looking for a banker.
You're looking for a banker.
Somebody wants to cooperate. If they don't, we'll make one. Land is the key. I might add that I get around the state of Illinois, and I've been having my own personal little unscientific quest as to how much ground it takes to support a young person and his wife and maybe two little babies in Illinois. And found out that the answer is a whole lot less ground than most people think.
That's right.
The answer being five acres from a lady that's already in the business and doing it. Her husband's a 1,000-acre corn and bean farmer. And so she told him what she wanted, and he had bought it for her, and she's making money at it. And so it works. And even some of it, the people that are in the corn and beans business, no.
Yeah. Well, I think we've hit on a couple of sort of themes in our introductions. One is big versus small, right? So kind of Wall Street versus Main Street. And then the other is, I think, fast versus slow. And so many of you are probably familiar with Woody Tash's book, Slow Money. The idea that if we can just slow our money down, that is part of what's going to be required to recreate economic systems that work for everybody. So what I'd like to do is talk a little bit about how Lion started, because these are new, and they're not difficult to start. And for you in Waukesha, there's an organization called Fund Milwaukee. They might have some business. Fund Milwaukee. They're just like we are. In fact, we use some of the same forms. We're very friendly with each other. And I probably get two or three calls every month from cities like Ithaca, New York, and you know, Portland, Oregon, and I think somebody mentioned Seattle, Washington. You know, folks who are like, can we make this work where we live? And the answer is probably yes, but of course you should check your local laws. In the state of Wisconsin, it's almost perfect for Lion, because we don't have any requirements that if Tara needs a loan for Tara's Way, I have to actually be her friend in order to loan her that money. There aren't any of those restrictions. Also, the way that we've set our Lion up, one of my biggies was, I want people of any means to be able to make these investments. So very often you'll see investment clubs or venture capital clubs, but you have to be an accredited investor, which for those of you who don't know what that means, it means you have to have over $100,000 in assets, not including your home. For some reason, the feds think that if you have that amount of money, you have some sort of magical smart gene. It's a million?
I thought it was 100,000.
A million. Even worse.
It's worse.
It's even worse. So if you have over $1 million in slush that you somehow are able to magically discern what a good investment is, and you're smart enough to do it on your own, Lion doesn't do that at all. We don't ask what your assets are. We don't care what your assets are. We care if you have a heart for investing locally and if you want to see your money do well here. So the way that this started was me literally reaching out to a few people that I knew had a few bucks and had a heart for this community, asking if they would be interested in doing this. And after we had kind of a critical mass of those folks together, then we started talking to businesses that we knew were interested in money, in getting some money. And they all happened to be, 100% of our businesses have been food-related businesses. Some of that's because we live in this area where food businesses, organic food is very important. But I think some of it also is because banks are clueless about how to loan money to farmers. So this needs a need. And the nice benefit you know, one of the ripple effects is I believe Madison is a bit more food secure because we have this vehicle. So, as I mentioned before some of you got in, I brought examples of our membership application. And if you'd like to make investments in Madison-based businesses, you're welcome to this. I also brought along a sample of what we look for businesses. It's not over the top. And I also brought an article that is an interview with Woody Tash that was in The Sun in 2010, if you'd like to read more about the concepts behind slow money. So, this is all happening word of mouth. I did not get paid. This is my passion project. This is what I really care about. I want to help entrepreneurs get access to capital. I sort of want to give the fingers to banks because, you know, as an entrepreneur, banks are great when you don't need them, and when you do need them, they are real jackasses. This feels like my sort of subversive way of being able to go around banks, but also, and this is the best side effect, is building community. It makes me so happy, like Mona mentioned, that she was with one of our businesses, Youngtown Baby Food. They do organic baby food. They're catching on like wildfire. And were you with the girls mixing?
Yeah.
You were, yeah. So tell about that.
Well, yeah, they it's two young women. They now, between them, have four babies. And so.
Which is really just a focus group.
Yeah.
Right, it's all research.
Oh, yeah. Kids. Feed them new stuff.
So one of them, it was like a week after one of the partners had a baby, and so they were short of help in the kitchen, like all weekend in the kitchen producing their food. So they said, can you come in? So, you know, we went in, put on a cap, and got my hands into a whole lot of kale, like 100 pounds of kale, a lot of dishes. I mean, it's fun. I learned a lot. I learned a whole lot. So, and I'll talk about that. Yeah. And that's part of what's good about doing this.
And I feel like, I mean, unless you have specific questions for me, and maybe you will at some point, or maybe not now, maybe later, I want to turn it over to you two, because, you know, I'm just this, like, person who's really excited about this, but you're a technical expert on how this happens, and Mona, you are doing a lot of these investments, and I think your experience really helps in as well.
So I understood. I just a simple question. I came in late. What does LIO stand for?
Local Investment Opportunity Network.
Okay.
And then you have to say RAR.
But go on and give the website address so they want to.
Sure. You're very good at this. Lioninvesting.org is the website. It's got tons of information. A lot of this stuff, I blog there, lioninvesting.org. In fact, let me write that.
Ooh. A visual aid.
Yeah, Wall Street does a different kind of wine.
Yeah.
I'm just a new comedian, man.
Okay, it's local investment.
Investing Opportunity Network.
Opportunity.
Yep.
So from my perspective, working with the businesses, what Lion has made possible here is access to probably the most difficult stage of financing for young businesses, which is, you know, startup, and not just startup, but like, they got the $5,000 from their dad and they started something, but then they need that extra to really, really get any kind of scale and get going. And that's too early for banks, right? We are actually blessed with, one of you mentioned, with community-based banks here and also Summit Credit Union, who does a lot of fairly impressive to me, risky early stage investments in support for the companies. So, but what Lion is doing is providing this capital at a really critical stage, and then because those businesses are now getting a little bit bigger, I have banks who are calling me saying, "Do you have food companies that we could work with?" So it's like this whole change. Like 5 years ago, nobody wanted to look at a food company. And now even some of these more progressive local lending institutions are interested in doing it. So
Lion is solving a problem in the financing world, but it's also spurring other things to happen locally because it exists, which I think is in other institutions. And I think that's really significant. So getting back to your thing about you need a bank, you may be surprised if you had something like this, you may get a bank, because they kind of look up and go, wow, this is... If you have local banks, and there are places in the country that are local bank deserts, there's no local lenders, it's only Chase, you know, or so, yeah.
Are you just loaning?
I'm
asking duplicate questions.
No, you're not.
I apologize.
No, please, the first questions. Well, have you done straight loans, Mom?
Yeah, John and I do loans at this point. No actual equity investment.
Now, that doesn't...
Loans are you're charging?
Yeah.
How much? We'll talk about that in a minute.
Yep.
Are you using anybody else that's available to help with business plans?
That's what Tara does.
That's kind of what I do. You missed my introduction, but that's part of the technical assistance component, and it's not in line. Like I work with the businesses, and so I help them do business planning. I also do a lot of packaging, what I call packaging. So it's helping people look at their financing and go, okay, well this is a good place for a Lion investment, but they may need a little bit of equity too to make that work. So then maybe we need to talk to this person about that, or I help them kind of sort through all of that. And my perspective, and I bet everybody would say the same thing, is if you want the Lion to work, and even the local bank to work, some form of this technical assistance has to be in place.
Yeah.
You have a score?
A score.
Do you have a score gender here?
Oh, score. Oh, that score, yeah. We do. We also have...
Are they helping?
Yeah, they do. I mean, I think... it's free. And like anything else, every score person is not HRE experienced, right? So sometimes it's hard for people to tell. I mean, but they're definitely a resource. The other one that's a national organization is the Small Business Development Centers. And they're free too. I'm free too, actually, for different reasons.
You should join SCORE then. SCORE is...
You know, the funny thing is, because I did what I did with my company, I am full. Like I have kind of
clue yourself.
Actually, I'm waiting list anyway, because I know a lot about. I know because I've been there and done that.
SCORE needs Tara, but Tara doesn't need SCORE.
I don't need SCORE, and in fact, I know it would be hard for me. Like, actually, what I really want to do is next phase here is this cloning issue that we need more people to know how to do what I know how to do. And so I want to work with people to get them ready to do that.
So why do you keep it separate from the Lions? Separate from the Lions, you said?
It is separate.
What's the rationale for that?
Well, all of these things bubbled up organically. So, I'm not paid to do this. This is a passion project for me. So for Lion, this is about what I can do. Tara is doing this really in a very full-time, probably full-time plus way. Mm-hmm. And her piece is absolutely needed, and I don't think it has to belong to Lion. And in fact, frankly, I could be put in jail if I tried to do what Tara is doing, or if I tried to tell investors how to invest. So we feel like we all play for the same team, but we all wear different jerseys. So, I would be putting myself in jeopardy if I tried to say, here's my business partner, Tara, and, I just don't want to go to jail.
There's all this securities law that makes these things difficult to mix up together. But it's kind of like why SCORE exists, to provide technical assistance, and banks don't provide technical assistance, because it's a conflict in theory. So, but having said that, I think finding ways. So we're blessed because we started this, and she started this, and we have active projects and active companies, and now we're getting to a place where we have to figure out how to scale it.
That's our big question.
Right now.
Just a real quick, this is pretty amazing. We shared this with you prior to the. There's another organization in Wisconsin called Slow Money Wisconsin. They don't really give, they don't have a fund. They're just sort of like a organizing group. Mm-hmm. Slow Money Wisconsin, Lion, and Tara came together in May, and Tara and another consultant coached 8 businesses that gave 8 pitches in one day to a room full of Monas and Johns. And we believe that we created the relationships that in one day place money in every one of those businesses, 100% of the businesses, and over $1 million in money was placed. So when you talk about like the economic impact of what this can do in the very, you know, concentrated and orchestrated, I mean, it's tremendous. Mm-hmm.
And I will say that the other part that, because I work with all the businesses then, that was the other piece of this, that there's often people will go and pitch at something like this, and then they have no way to really execute on it, right? The business people don't really know how to do it, and the investors don't necessarily know how to do it. So after that, I was really busy.
Right.
It was just before, but it was after, working with the entrepreneurs to get everything in place so that they were ready to take the money. And in some cases, it was traditional lenders who came in. So it's really exciting to see what can happen. And those are all local businesses, yeah.
So you're sort of flying under the radar as far as licensing.
Well, not really. I mean, we're not doing anything illegal. I mean, we're not flying under a radar.
Okay.
I mean, we're...
They're just not going into things that they're not legally authorized to do.
Right. Like, it would be illegal for me to advise the member investors who are in Lion. It would be illegal for me to advise them to get into something. Like,
you guys... So pick up this company and that one, yeah.
But if you're... But if you're bringing into the sale a buyer and a seller together, in this case you're bringing a borrower and a lender together, then technically that's brokering.
Well, it's not because I'm not being paid. Okay. I'm not getting any kind of a commission. And I am not...
She doesn't know the details.
I don't know.
She has no idea.
So you're an expediter. We're a facilitator.
I feel like I just facilitate it. So... If there needs to be a central place where people who want to do this local investing can get on an email list. And there needs to be a central place where people who want a loan from local investors can get on an email list. And I happen to be the person who puts the email list together. So I'm really sensitive about saying I'm flying under the radar because I'm waiting to get a call someday to say, like, what you're doing is illegal. That's why we've had good legal counsel in Joe Boucher. And that's why I don't know the details. And I don't... There are some investments I've made myself, but, you know.
That's just true.
Yeah. No, I mean, you can understand why I'm sensitive. I support a family and run a business myself, and I can't afford to go to prison. So, yeah.
Why don't you walk through what happens when a business comes to you and say, okay, maybe I want to get some money from local investors. Why don't you go through the logistics?
Yeah. So, when a business says, hey, I heard about Lion, or hey, this is what usually happens. Hey, another person who got funded through Lion, I know them because we're in the same food hub network, told me about Lion. How do you know, what do I have to do? So I send them this little capital request form that asks them what their name is, how much money they want, who their references are. They submit it, and then Mona and I usually review it, and if we feel like it's weird or something doesn't add up.
Incomplete, yeah.
We ask them to fill in the details, or there are some situations where the business is so new, or there's something's going on that will say, can you provide some projections, or if you have a business plan, you know, please submit it. And then after it's complete, I send it out to the member network, and with just some details, the website, you know, if there's anything. You know, I always will say, like, you've seen this brand at the Willie Street Co-op, you've seen it at Whole Foods Market, so that, because they might be familiar with the brand. And then I say, you know, here's how to contact them, or if you want me to broker the meeting, I can broker the meeting. And I've never had an investor ask me to broker the meeting. And then And then I usually send a reminder 2 weeks later via email. So it's that's literally what happens from the capital request perspective. And then from the member perspective, we have a similar little sheet that says, you know, why are you interested in local investing? And the reason I put this together is I don't want any vultures. I don't want people who are like, yeah, I want to invest $1,000 and make $1 million. And it's not a get-rich-quick scheme. I'm trying to make sure we have the right culture of investors who are, you know, part of the network. So I read over their application. Sometimes if they're new to investing, I'll say, do you want to talk on the phone? You know, have you ever done something like this before? Or do you want to meet for coffee? And then they have an opportunity to ask their questions. I will tell you the hardest loan to make is the first one, because it's so foreign. You know, people are like, I'm used to having somebody else do this for me, or I invest in mutual funds. I don't know, you know, they make the decisions for me. So it's really interesting to put power back into people's hands, and sometimes, you know,
we have some frozen.
Yeah, we have some very high net worth individuals who really want to do this, but they're terrified that they're going to do something wrong. Or they're going to follow it. So,
is that good? That cover it?
Yeah. Well, and also we often know each other because Lion has network
rights
as well. So there's usually a personal connection.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Why don't your credit unions do this?
Some do. Some credit union does do some of those.
They do some, but they don't typically. You know, I've seen one loan for $10,000, but that's super unique. You know, that really, for them to go through their underwriting process, because they do have to underwrite, it costs so much money that they just, it's very difficult for them to justify doing smaller loans. That's why you have this big gap, this capital gap.
They do small loans every day.
Well,
cars.
With a vehicle as collateral.
Yeah. With a vehicle as collateral. This time they have to go through the whole business and underwrite, and they're making a bet on the entrepreneur, so they have to do, underwriting is more complicated when they're looking at something like this.
There's also a, credit unions are held to, I believe, 13% of assets for member business lending. That's a federal law that they're kind of trying to change to raise it to 20-something. So because credit unions are sort of chartered to be these not-for-profit financial cooperatives, they're not really, they weren't set up to make business loans, but they're given 13% of their assets to do that. So that's one issue where a lot of them are not willing to take on little loans because they're kind of saving that 13% for the big ones.
Michael, what did you say the percentages they're trying to get raised to?
20-something.
Okay. Margaret, did you have a question?
Yeah, I'm just wondering what's the average amount of money that's loaned and what kind of percentage of those loans are paid back?
I do not know of a default.
Okay.
So
that's
at this
right.
point,
so
I would say 100%.
Okay.
And I also don't know what the average loan size is. I can tell you what the average request is.
Okay.
The average request is, one of the things that we try to do is not take requests for less than $10,000. So if you need less than $10,000, we feel like that you can probably get that in a different way. We want to keep this at businesses who need bigger chunks of cash. But what I will tell you is that as our businesses are getting more sophisticated, they are asking, like, for example, a request just came through for $300,000, that's what it was, and they didn't, and they wanted to work with investors who were willing to make at least a $25,000 investment. So, you know, do the math, right? That's going
right.
to be at least 12 months,
right?
So, so what I will say is the average request is now going up, and it's in that $25,000 to $30,000 range, whereas 2 years ago, you know, we were seeing requests for $2,500 or, you know, we need just this little bit to do this little piece. And I think some of that is because the businesses are getting better advice and they're getting their act together. They've got their business plans together. You probably, if you're from out of town, you will consume a brand that was funded by a Lion investor while you're here. If you drink and eat local foods. So
that's pretty cool. So you've covered really well what it was like from the investor side and the business side, but then once you step away, I think that's what I'm not hearing is what's that like. So if I give you the $25,000 and you have the business lined up, you just put us in contact. We work out the terms. Is there a rate of return there that gets brokered, or how does that?
Yeah, maybe I can talk a little bit about what we do. And I guess I'm going to provide a dose of reality here with everybody saying, well, you know, banks are terrible and stuff. You know, both John and I have day jobs. We're not wealthy. I think you used the word sugar mommy or sugar mama. So one of our first loans, the first payment, the guy wrote on the check in the memo thing, he put sugar mama payback. Because I thought, like, it wasn't really true, you know. So, but so I kind of made some notes about the process that we go through. First of all, when we knew we were going to start doing this, I drafted some loan documents, and that meant I just went out on the internet, I tried to find some loan documents, I kind of cobbled them together, what I thought we might find interesting, and then we went to see an attorney, and we had her review them, make sure they were compliant with Wisconsin law, tweak them so we didn't get in too much trouble. And there's different documents for different situations, whether it's secured with collateral, if the person who owns the business is married, not only would you maybe get a personal guarantee, but you have to get spousal consent. So there's a lot of documents in there. We try to keep them to fewer pages than a bank would do. So they're pretty short. Usually the main form is maybe 4 pages in bigger print than a bank. And then there's maybe 4 to 6 other pages. And as I said, the loans are to people and businesses we know. So if it's like a car loan, it's a little bit simpler. I mean, you take the car as collateral, and there's a fairly standard form, and then you go file that probably with the Department of Motor Vehicles in the state you live in. If it's a business, it gets really complicated. So it helps that John is a CPA, and that we both have some experience in this area, but we go out and visit. I mean, the kind of fun thing is we get to walk around farms, we get to cook in kitchens, we get to drive tractors, but we really try to understand their business. We try to get an idea of what they're going to do with the funds. Hopefully it's expanding the business or something that will bring in more revenue. We try to come up with a cash flow statement, which most small businesses don't have. So are they really going to have the cash flow every month to make a payment? So then we figure out how much the loan will be over what period of time, usually based on the cash flow. So we have software that does pretty specialized amortizations, which I think you could probably get for $200. So things like a farmer who might not have so much income in the winter, maybe we do low payment January through April, and then we crank it up in the summer. So that you can't really do that with free software you find on the internet. We try to come up with a reasonable period of time. We look at all their financial statements, their tax returns. We go online and look at UCC filings, Uniform Commercial Code, see what other loans they have and what the security is for those loans. Whether, you know, somebody says, we'll take my van, if they've already got a bank loan and the bank has already used that van as security, it's not really very useful to us. And we try to figure out what other factors could affect their ability to pay. Okay, so now we've got all the terms worked out, and usually I sit down and work out the documents, send it to the borrower and say, this will fit to you. And once they say, yeah, we figure out, like, say it's a tractor, we've got to have a serial number, same as kitchen equipment, even grain we've taken occasionally as collateral, and, you know, it's like, okay, we have 40 bushels of, you know, red wheat grain, yeah, from Kansas, and we go in and we look at it, it's like, okay, I guess this is good. So, you know, it's a learning process for us. So I send them the documents, we get them signed, and then deliver a check. So that's just the beginning. Yeah. Then we go back. I usually file the UCC filing online to say, okay, here, we've taken this whatever piece of equipment as security. Usually, if the payment's monthly, we send a reminder, either snail mail or email when payment's due, and then I've got a calendar where I track, okay, you know, Joe's payment is due on the 9th of every month, you know, did it actually show up? Of course, deposit it, make sure the check doesn't bounce, record the payments. If somebody's late with a payment, usually we'll go out on the weekends,
pay them a visit, try to find out what's going on. You know, did they really just forget, or are they in a cash flow crunch? What's the story there? If there's a problem, we try to find a way to help them. Tara knows we have one now that's having a cash flow crunch. And we're spending days every week trying to help them at this point. If they make extra payments, we have to go back and redo the amortization. Same if they miss the payment, we have to go back and redo the amortization. Sometimes we have to rework the loan documents. Sometimes that's more legal fees for us. So I guess the reality check is, you know, we do charge interest. It's certainly more than you would earn on a CD or a savings account. But it's a huge amount of work. I think probably 1 to 2 hours a month per loan. So let's say you make 10 loans, you might be spending 20, even if somebody's in trouble, 30 or 40 hours a month. Handholding, recording, doing paperwork, mailing out things. It's a lot. Right now, with our day jobs and that, it's really, so that's the kind of downside. So if you're interested in doing this kind of thing, you probably need a serious time commitment to develop not only the learning documents, but probably kind of a procedures checklist. You know, what are you going to look for when you go out and talk with somebody about making a loan? What documents do you need from them? What documents do you have to have on file when you actually make a loan? There's a lot you need to do, and you probably need $700 on attorney's fees just to start out. So if you're going to make one loan here and there, I'm not sure that the interest you're going to make on that is really worth the effort. The other risk you run is that I think money can sour relationships a lot. And we haven't had this happen yet, but let's say you make a car loan to your neighbor and he gets laid off and he can't make the payments, or at least not on time. What's that going to do with your relationship? I don't know. And so a lot of these businesses are one illness, one bacterial infection away from big problems. And I sometimes worry, you know, we'll be there with them, but I hope that the relationship stays good.
So there's no, none of you are involved in like any revolving loan funds where you don't know who the money's going to. Like if I just come and give you $100 and you say, here's your note, you'll get 2%, we're going to give it to whoever we find as a viable business.
So really, your co-op is starting the local vendor fund that I described before, and that fund will work that way. That right now it's in a pilot that's about to launch, and that the funds that are being used for the pilot are from a small number of accredited investors.
So that's completely legal.
Because
I know a lot of people are waiting for the SEC to change some laws. There's a huge one right now. I'm really into craft beer, and there's a huge one now that's just getting people excited. As soon as the SEC changes the laws, there's going to be this huge influx of money for people to start microbreweries and nanobreweries and all sorts of other cool things all over the country, because people are seeing the explosion in this industry, and they want to, you know, they want to help them out. They want to make a little money, too.
They want to drink good beer.
So with Willie Street Co-op, though, one of the things that's really unique about that, because they are a co-op, is that once we get proof of concept, and it's a lot of process, right? Like what Mona just described, Willie Street is going to have to do, basically. So they want to get all that in place. But just like Willie Street used, they raise money for members to fund their expansion.
Right.
They can raise money for members because members are owners, right? So you are technically an equity owner in a co-op, right? So the intention there is to make it possible for any member of Willie Street Co-op to be an investor in that vendor fund. That's the intention. And right now that's a legal way to have non-accredited investors invest.
Well, back to his point, though, about line of sight versus putting your money in. In the vendor loan fund, will the investors know who the farms and suppliers are?
Yeah, the idea would be they would know who they are, but it isn't like Eat Lion where I'm having a personal financial transaction with you.
You're basically giving over your faith to somebody else and saying, here's my money, I trust you.
The willing to do the right thing, right? Yeah.
And, you know, not everybody's going to do what Mona just described, right? It's actually quite difficult to do that for a lot of people. And so
I feel like probably most of the people here are more interested in the, like, you know, a lot of people talk about the divestment from, you know, their 401ks or whatever, where they don't know where their money's going.
Yep.
They just want something that looks like that, but they have a little more transparency.
Yeah.
I would mention there is a North Country Development Fund in Minneapolis.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
They take money and then loan it out to cooperatives, and they have a pretty good, I think it's 5 or 6% return. And that's, I believe, I haven't looked into it too much, but guaranteed. North Country Development Fund. Now, you have to become a member, so it's like $100 or whatever, and that's just sort of put aside. I don't think that gets invested. That's just sort of your equity in the fund.
Mm-hmm.
And then you give them however much you want. There's
terms. They act kind of like a central, in a way, like a central lender to co-ops. So that's their, you know, so Willie Street doesn't need money from a lender right now, but over in the past they did, and that was kind of, so they're kind of a, I don't know, an umbrella lender for co-ops.
Yeah. But yeah, they don't need to have that one-on-one relationship with the people who are giving the money because they have such a big portfolio now, and that they have, the co-ops are paying it back at such a rate that they can then pay back the investors, guaranteed.
So would it be legal to take your function of managing the investment to have that kind of people working for Lion who did that for investors?
Would that be licensed?
Yeah. License. Anything else? People want to be able to invest locally, but it needs to be simple.
Yep.
They want you to list, here's some local projects, here's the kind of money they need.
Mm-hmm.
If you invest in these, we have someone who will manage that for you. And here's the rate of return we're expecting from it. But that gets to be much more.
I think that's where the co-op is going with this fund.
Yeah.
It's just starting.
Yeah, and the issue, it is very difficult under SEC regulations to do that if you're going to take money from non-accredited investors. So the hurdle for an organization to get organized to do that is pretty high. But and that's part of what
some credit union, I think, is backing that, is why there's sort of a, you know, that's why the SEC isn't like probably freaking out, because there's a financial institution behind it that if things go south, if it all falls apart, there's somebody to go to.
The Willow Street has
in the Willow Street, Summit is involved in it as well. But the seed money came actually from accredited investors, so there isn't an issue with that.
We have in the back in the coat hat, and then.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I don't know if you've heard of RSS, Real Center for Digital Social Finance, Darn Schaefer, Valley, which has RSS' whole mission, or one of their missions, is to reimagine money and transform the way the world works with money. They have webinars along with Valley. Don Schaefer is the president of that organization. He's one of the founding members of Valley, which is the Business Alliance of Local Living Economies. So they have a whole arm of Valley, which is trying to develop community stock exchanges in Boston. There's a group of people in New York and Boston that are getting around with the B Corp business, B Corp people, I don't know if you know them, getting around all these securities regulations. And a guy out of Vancouver called Joel Solomon up in Canada, Renewal Capital, along with Leslie Christian, whose portfolio of 21 investments in Portland, Oregon. But anyone that's interested in the things you're talking about, I think between going on their websites and I know Don Schaefer at RSS Social Finance would finance any of the causes that you're talking about. I don't know what his parameter. I mean, they've grown. They're probably the largest of their ilk today. And I don't
they're
know
by far the most sophisticated, too. Like, they have a debt fund for investors. They have an equity portfolio. They're very, very far down the developmental path compared to what we are here. It is, and what you brought up, we do need some changes to the SEC laws to make it more feasible for non-accredited investors to get involved. One of the things that Bali has been championing recently is something very simple that that a bunch of the people I work with in young stages do, which is prepayment things. So like a CSA model where you prepay for shares of vegetables, mm-hmm. getting applied to meat or cheese or beer, or there's absolutely no problem with that. So, and that can provide cash flow to a young business at a time they desperately need it in that early stage. So, I mean, so that in a way is a form of investing. Yeah. Right.
Also,
and
that's something that anybody can do.
And if whatever business you start, if you're going to serve consumers and want a consumer cooperative, you go off and make a membership and ask for, you know, $50, $100, whatever the membership fee is, and then you get that substantial support business at the start. Because there's no terms that say that money's ever going to be paid back,
yep.
or that you're actually going to start a business once you say, well, I'm going to be a member. You,
Did you have a comment?
Well, two, actually. One was about startups in particular. I know data shows that like over 50% of startups fail. And the biggest reason they fail is because they're undercapitalized. And so I think, you know, this kind of thing for startups is like awesome because it could help them with the fact that no matter how well-intentioned and how thoughtful the people are going into things, they seem to always like underestimate what the cost of doing business is going to be, and they wind up failing because they don't have enough capital to cover what they thought they would have enough capital to cover. So this could be good, and it could get them over the hump, because it's not to say that they have a bad idea, it's just that they couldn't figure out the financing properly in the first place, which is really hard to predict. But I also wanted to make a comment. I don't want to divert too much from the main theme, but what you said before about this place that you think maybe is guaranteeing 5%, I know enough about financing and investing to know that there is really no way that anybody can guarantee paying above market returns unless they're running something that's like a pyramid scheme, which means that they keep getting more money coming in so that they can keep paying people back. And that's how we get the Michael Milkins and the Bernie Madoff and all those people that we all know and love so well.
Right.
So be careful if you see anybody trying to guarantee you something that sounds too good to be true, because as probably P.T. Barnum said, it probably is too good to be true.
I thought I have a kind of a couple of things here that I thought we might want to talk about. In terms of barriers and also next steps. So we think that what we're doing in Wisconsin is pretty cool with the investing in our local food system and really kind of focusing there. But should we talk a little bit about barriers first? Like when you think about, let's just all take it, you know, when you think about the barriers that you see and have stopped you from doing good work, what
have they done? So I think this is me from the perspective of working with clients and things. I think what the process that Mona described is not possible for a lot of people to do. I mean, you need quite a bit of financial acumen on your part in order to do that, and time. And
not all of our investors do that, by the way. As an investor, mm-hmm. I don't do all that.
Yeah. So I mean, you could not do all that too, you know. But it's that's a barrier. I mean, it's also a barrier just psychologically for people to direct investing. That's kind of what you were talking about. You're used to your 401k. They kind of manage it, you know. You kind of make like some allocation selections every once in a while, but you're not picking companies, you're not following stuff. And so that's a big change.
Yeah.
But I think one of the things we have to remember is that Main Street used to work this way. Like Joe had the hardware store, and he knew the guy, you know, who had a son who really wanted to start his business, and he wanted to have a grocery store. And so Joe would help the boy who wanted to start the grocery store. He'd lend him money, and when things went awry, he'd coach him. You know, there was this culture around small business that was very, very supportive. And we've lost that. I mean, we don't have that culture anymore. So one of the barriers is, and kind of why I do what I do, is we got to recreate that community around around small business, because, you know, I think we kind of demonize small, you know, business because we associated with Republicans and they're bad and all that. But really, there's this rock part of what we do in our culture that is small businesses, and kind of stimulating the culture around small business is something that is really important. And we're kind of like institutional replacements for something that kind of used to organically happen.
That's right.
Well, the first barrier is what we've all been talking about, is that there's no place for the person who has $1,000 or $10,000 or just no time or money and feel like, okay, I'm comfortable putting my money in this local investment fund and it'll be taken care of. The second one is we've almost had too much good PR about local food. So, but there's some businesses, and Tara has been good at pointing this out, where there's not enough of a local market. So if you start, well, we talked about the baby food. There's just not enough babies in Madison to support a local
organic baby food company.
So it really has to be a broader market, and I'm not sure that we're doing, as a state or a larger community, a good enough job marketing these companies outside of Madison.
And what I would say to that is, I feel like we have this institutional bias for companies that have 1,000 jobs, So when Tara talked, when she introduced herself, and she said that her namesake organization, Tara's Way, will invest another $20 million in a plant and hire 20 more people. 20 more people for our economic development organizations isn't even enough to make them get out of bed. You know, they are not excited about 20 people. And that's one of the things as a small business owner that really honks me off about thinking about growing small businesses, because I really believe that the days of the Ford Motor Company plants are gone. We will be growing our economies 20 people by 10 people by 5 people. So to support, one of the barriers is the demand side. Do we have enough babies in Madison to support an organic baby food company? But there's also institutional bias and barriers against getting excited about the butcher who has 7 employees and is going to add 5 more because he's going to add goats. You know, I mean, so I do feel like we have to wear capes, you know, in order to try to tell these stories of these local superheroes. The other thing that I will say, I don't know that it's a barrier, but it's something that scares me a little bit, is very often for our local businesses to scale, to get bigger, money comes in from other, usually the coasts. And then the strain with that money is eventually they want those people to come out to the coast. They want them to move their businesses. And I am so tired of seeing the backside of our smartest people because they had to follow the money. So I think one of the barriers is getting people friendly with the idea that they can invest in their own backyard. And I think that, the notion of making it simple and easier, I do want to think about that, because not everybody, I don't do the 15-step process that you do. And I feel like a D student now. Now that I know that that's your process, I'm like, God, I'm so going to flunk this class. But,
So one of the things that I'm doing coming up in the fall here, and it'll be within the university and in expansion, is something called the Food Finance Accelerator. And the reason I'm doing this is within the university, we can help on an educational basis get people feel more comfortable about investing. So some of the understanding of this. Some of this is just like, I don't know how much you know about food, but But I know people who have money and who actually could do everything Mona did, but they don't know food. Like, they don't know how to tell whether a food business is going to work or not. Right? So, I, from the vantage point that I have, I can say, this is the kind of thing that's working and this is how it's, what isn't working. So, when you're a local investor, you know your entrepreneur. So you can also help your entrepreneur. When you invest in, I'm going to invest in your company, and I know that, you know, you've got to get this kind of scale or this business isn't going to work, so I'm going to help you do it, right? It's a very different thing than just, I'm going to go to Dan and get along. Nobody's helping you do anything. You're just like, pay your... So I think we can... Some of these barriers we're going to be able to... we're going to, if they're here, we can take it down a notch, right? We can't solve the problem, but I do think we can take it down a notch to make it a bit more approachable for people.
I don't want to just talk about barriers and work, too, because part of the reason we do...
I was just going to say, why do we do it, Mona?
Yeah. Well, I think, first of all, John and I are fairly new to Madison, and so this is a huge social life for us in a way to connect to the community.
Climbing in, weeping?
Yeah. Well, would you rather just
what
sit in a
date,
bar and
you
drink
know?
Or, yeah. So it's fun. I mean, we might not be getting rich on it, but it really is enriching our lives. I mean, we learned about moisture levels and wheat and where to find the best butter and when to harvest basil and... You know, how a commercial kitchen works. Where else? I got to drive a tractor. Where else can we do that kind of thing? So I think there's a second kind of reason that's just to enrich your life to do this. So I don't want to paint it as all work and no play.
Where do you get the best butter?
Go for the hand-rolled Amish butter.
Amish butter.
I mean, it comes in a thing like this.
The problem is it's enough butter. It's like, you know.
By yourself. Well,
not
our own
that's not fair.
Maybe we should
form
a CSA.
Yeah, yeah. Amish butter. Yeah. You know, and part of this is different like that, what I talked about the businesses, like what businesses are working. That scale issue, if you're a food business in Chicago, is totally different.
Yes, right.
We on a good day, we have 400,000 people here in the metro area of Madison. That's actually, you know, not that many people really when you're trying to do organic baby food. You need a lot more than that, right? So, but if you were right outside of Chicago, you have millions of people, right? So some of this, it depends on where you are too. It's not the same nationally.
And it helps if you're willing to take a payment in cheese, pork,
enough tomatoes to
right.
your big driveway. Yeah.
Well, but you know, you talked about the CSA, but we also try to buy from these people, and so we have one cheesemaker, and if he's not having a good month, we've got like 20 pounds of cheese in the fridge. You know, we go buy some more cheese.
Yeah.
So we kind of eat our profits.
So profits are full.
Yes,
that's right.
For.
That's right.
Did you say earlier what pricing, so if someone should raise, say, 10, but if they already have 10, 5, 10,000 startup, that's the point that they will come to you after an initial?
For Lion, we like to see requests that are at least $10,000, because for the amount of work that an investor goes through, doing less than that almost isn't worth it.
They should have already had it. We don't want them to come to you as an initial. Had built up amount of capital.
Typically, they're like stage two, or you know, they've already proven that what they have is going to work. So we're usually not the first, like Tara was saying, we're usually not the first ones in. They've usually tapped their parents for that or their grandparents for that.
You know, and Lion isn't like microlending, like hardcore microlending, right? Along with the peer to peer loan of $500. It isn't like that. And I think in a way, at least here in Madison, the bigger gap actually was what Lion fills. Like, because people do tend to be able to figure out a way
to start.
And you know, I would encourage efforts to get prepayment, some kind of prepayment for things, and maybe Lion can do that. I don't know, but because that can solve that really early thing too. If you're gonna make cheese, he did a cheese essay, and he did a cheese in the month club. So you pay you know whatever the fee was, and then you're getting cheese every month, right? That was his early $10,000.
Yep.
Right. So they're kind of mechanisms for doing that. Getting people to think about, so one of the other things I'm going to do in this accelerator is to get people to think about money as this continuum, that you start out in this little phase and you need a certain kind of money, and then you need this kind of money, and then you need this kind of money, as a business grows and is successful, because that's what we want them to do. And we get to plug the holes all the way along the way. Like mainstream capital has done it this way. We got to emulate that in a different way, right? So we have to have our ways to do the early stage, and then what Lion is doing, and then, I mean, ultimately for Mona, instead of having a VC firm or something, the takeout is probably from a credit union or something like that.
And we have had that happen.
Yeah. And that's what we wanted to have happen.
Exactly.
Because now that business is in a lending organization that can still look at it as they grow. So that's what we're trying to replicate.
You have all this fancy business talk like the takeout. You know what takeout is for me? Like
Chinese.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know.
All right. Final questions or last words from the panelists? Let's start with the audience. Any final questions? We're just at 25 after.
So, did groups like yours that are elsewhere in the country, I mean, is there like a resource page or list where you would see yourself fitting into? You're mostly local, I assume.
Yeah,
California,
yeah, right.
All of them. Yep. So what would be comparable?
California is not set up for this. Their laws are really bitchy about doing this kind of stuff. So like Jenny Casson at Cutting Edge Cap, I mean, they're trying to figure this stuff out, but it's tough. I know that Ithaca, New York, Portland, Oregon, Milwaukee, I believe there are people up in Minneapolis. There isn't a new resource page that I know of to point people. Bali might be the closest, because they've really been pushing this concept at their last two conferences, so they might be the closest, but I'm not sure.
And Bali is also doing, you know, the prepayment thing. There's some mechanisms for that now, so. What is that called? So there's, Bali is a good resource. But it's definitely emerging. We're all learning as we do this.
Yep, it is. Hugely learning.
Hugely learning.
I can't get it out of my head that you're not talking about anything new. Nothing new. Mm-hmm. This is the job of the local banker. Mm-hmm. It has been forever. Mm-hmm. And now I'm speaking out of ignorance. Done before. Why? I've heard a lot of discussion about how difficult it is. I mean, it's simply a matter of doing what you need to do.
Yep.
You got to market and keep track of it, keep track of people.
Because it's not profitable enough if you have to have these banks.
If it's not profitable enough, then it's not going to happen, and it shouldn't happen.
Well,
let me start.
I think what happened, let me finish up.
My father-in-law was a farmer. Mm-hmm. And he had his farm sold out from under him by his dad, who owned the ground. So he went to work managing farms. He knew what farming is, and he's the guy. He's you, I guess. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because he knew whatever he needed to know about farming, and he could make those decisions. That was his job as a vice president of a local bank in Morrison. And they made a whole bunch of money off of him. And it would seem to me that if that can be done with farming, it can be done with doing all the things that a lot of us want to do. And helping small people, individual entrepreneurships, get going. And if nothing else, you know, you set up your own advisory councils and do that.
Yeah, and I think part of what happened in the last recession because of
when the banker's going to cover your butt.
Yeah, like their lives became hell. So they you know, shit rolls downhill. So it happened to me, right? I have a big loan from a bank, and my life became hell because his life was hell. And we're still kind of in that. I mean, I think I see much more activity now, but there was like for a while, it was like we are not lending. And so these businesses, there was no way. And it's thawing a little bit. Then the other thing I would really be worried about, all of us should be worried about, is the demise of small local banks, you know, getting rolled up into the big ones. And they don't make, they're not interested in the little butcher on the corner. They don't care.
And you get one started.
Yeah.
Started.
Start a bank. That has happened.
It's not that easy.
That was a session upstairs.
Public banking.
Yep, it's a shame these two were at the same time slot.
Well, he's going to be on the panel tonight because I read up
Ellen
on
is.
Right.
Isn't he? Well, yeah. Ellen is. And actually, the Public Banking Institute is part of this Economic Democracy Conference. Sunday is going to be a day of public banking. We have Kurt von Mettenheim from Brazil, who's an international expert on public banks, and then Mark Armstrong will be presenting on the roadmap to state public banks.
So public banks, the public banks are the same as a community bank, obviously.
Right.
That's not starting to
run that. No, I know.
Right.